Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-pated fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who, for the most part, are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Handy, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden and T. Quillen, your hosts for the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Okay, so we're here at SETC, and we're in the hotel room, and we had a great interview with Laura Cole at the Atlanta Shakespeare Company, which is also known as the Shakespeare Tavern, which is on Peachtree Street, and we took a tour of the theater, and there's so much good stuff there, we don't want to edit any of it out, so...
There it is.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet.
Yet I ask you to take time to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them. And they don't all play,
in the gutter, of course. Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children.
It's time once again for some deep fried theater!
So, Shakespeare Tavern.
Right.
Okay.
This is a great space.
I'm telling you.
I haven't really even walked around yet, but it's pretty impressive.
Oh, you haven't taken a tour?
No.
Not yet.
We'll get that in a little bit, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about the history of Shakespeare Tavern.
The Shakespeare Tavern in this building started in, I think it was 90. Mm-hmm. I actually saw the first show we did here. It was The Tempest, and the artistic director, Jeff Watkins, played Prospero. And there were porta potties for bathrooms. It had just been started. The theater had just been built. I think this is an old trolley barn. The theater space is, and you can actually see the big doors where the trolleys went out, or the horse drawn trolleys.
Wow!
I mean, it's old. And we own, this is 501 Peachtree and 499, but we're now one big giant 499 Peachtree Street. And it's a great space for what we do. The theater itself is really warm and inviting and very, very kind to actors. The audience loves seeing shows, Shakespeare especially, in our space.
Excellent.
As you can see, the rehearsal and office space is a little cramped. We have our... Y'all can't see it in podcast land, but behind us is pieces of the traveling set that we're working on right now.
Great, and with your permission, we'll snap some pictures in just a little bit too, if you don't mind. That way we can post them. But so now your official title with the company is
Director of Education and Training.
Okay,
and I'm also a professional actor. Primarily, that's what I do. I act, I do some directing, and I teach first through college and professional actors. Students in residencies, workshops. I have about, I think it's 24 to 28 professional actors who are also specially trained to do education that work with me, doing the different types of education things we offer.
Excellent.
And I perform and act and direct and teach year-round.
So you're very busy is what you're trying to tell us.
Yes, I directed two shows today, a final dress rehearsal of Love's Labor's Lost that has previews tomorrow night and the next night. Open Saturday, and a children's production of the Scottish play, which opens in 2 weeks.
Cool. Give those dates then, because this is going to go live probably on Monday. So
on Monday?
Yeah, give the dates of the show.
Love's Labor's Lost opens, starts performing March 8th and goes through April 8th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 6:30. The tavern opens an hour and 15 minutes before performance for food. So if you want to get here on a Saturday night, get here at 6:15, get a table, get a beer, wine, Coke, whatever, and our food, English pub menu, which is really good, and sit down and watch the really terrific show.
That's excellent. So you actually truly are a tavern then. You do actually serve.
We are an equity theater that also serves food and beer and wine.
Okay.
Yes. And much in the way Shakespeare had, not that he had a tavern, but you could drink beer and eat some nuts and bring your own food and watch a show. Except for we're air conditioned and we have bathrooms.
Excellent. So, so yeah, you've talked about your shows that you've got coming up. Tell us a little bit about.
Well, it seems like I think I know where you're going with this. It seems like with the added the food and the wine and the beer and everything, right. There seems to be definitely a strong ambiance to the pieces in and of them in the space itself. Mm-hmm. How does that chemistry affect the performer?
It's palpable? Extraordinary. We have gone very heavily into what we call original practice, and original practices in this case mean investigating the way Shakespeare's stagecraft as a writer, as a director, as an actor affected the performances, affected the audience, affected ticket sales. He was a really successful theater producer, mm-hmm. as well as playwright. He was mostly made his money being the producer and an owner, part sharer in the Globe. And so what we've done is investigated his original practices, such as we keep everything in Renaissance costume if we're doing Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Nourish the soul with food as well as poetry, and we move pretty quickly through a play. 2 hours traffic is often standard, not for Love's Labor's Lost, sorry, it's a little longer. we look at organic sound made by the actors backstage rather than recorded. Any sword fighting you see on stage, while carefully choreographed, is also as period as we can make it, as we understand it. Nobody really knows what it was like to go right. see a show at the Globe, although there are a lot of diary entries that tell us it was darned lively, much livelier than an audience today can right. handle.
Yeah.
We often say our most Renaissance audiences, our most Elizabethan audience, is a student audience. Exposed to their first live theater, it's very different when you have a bunch of ninth graders watching Romeo and Juliet mm-hmm. up close and personal, fighting, sword fighting, blood and guts, all the poetry, that intense poetry that speaks to adolescents in a really special way. And then a Saturday night at the Tavern when the adult audience usually pays the top ticket price, they're very different and much more what we all understand to be a theater audience. Still pretty lively. We tend to get a real diverse audience that may not always be your standard theater goer someplace else.
Right.
We do have a lot of people that see theater all over town, opera, ballet, are very widely read, so to speak, right. as far as culture in Atlanta. But we pull from all different backgrounds. A lot of our audience has been seeing us since they were kids in high school.
That's great.
Anyway, it's a very immediate experience of Shakespeare. Very clear, if you ask me. No, I believe that totally. You don't even have to ask me. Just come and see a show and you'll see. You get a lot more of what's going on in a Shakespeare play when you see it here.
Talk to us about your connection with SETC this year, since we're in Atlanta. Talk to us about what you guys are doing with SETC workshop-wise or masterclass-wise or performance-wise.
Sure, well, we hope everybody at SETC wants to get a ticket to Love's Labor's Lost. It opens Saturday night. So we'd love to have people come and experience what we do. But on Friday morning, I think it's from 9 to 12, I'll be teaching a master class. It'll be very, I hope, participatory with anyone who's interested from SETC on two things, really. Acting Shakespeare, either as a professional or a student, being introduced to it right now, you know, Friday morning, or someone who's done a lot of Shakespeare that would like more info or more input into what they're doing with a monologue, as well as exploring the whole group of us, exploring a couple of the original practices that we use in our performances. One, organic sound. We're going to be creating probably a battle scene from Julius Caesar with some of our props and a lot of the organic sound that we would use anyway. The audience will get to actually investigate that, understand the rationale behind it, some of the pedagogy of what we do. Mm-hmm. To create the theatrical event that is an original practice production. I'll also look very, very particularly at a couple of different things textually in Shakespeare's plays that tell the actor a lot of what can be going on emotionally, physically for the artist. Shakespeare wrote stage direction and all sorts of information into his language.
Right.
And it doesn't take a lot of work to pick apart some of that, and it's like a gold mine.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I find that most young actors are intimidated by, is that there's no stage directions. So I'm like, no, they're there.
Yes,
just got to know where to look.
Yeah.
It's, and it's not, you don't have to dig too deep either. That's
not at all, not at all. And I always say, above all else, trust your actor instincts. Mm-hmm. They're really good. He was an actor. We're all actors. it's like we're in it together. It is not a mystery at all. I think sometimes the study of Shakespeare in as literature has elevated it to a place that is somewhat unapproachable
right.
for a professional and can be intimidating. And one thing it doesn't take is, you know, a highfalutin accent, an English accent, or an advanced degree to understand. It does take some care, but, you know, it's not what everybody thinks.
No, this is right up T's alley, I have to say. He is a Shakespeare fiend.
That's my thing.
Did you just wake up one day and go, I love Shakespeare and I'm going to do Shakespeare? Or how did you come to Shakespeare per se?
You're going to get I had this teacher who.
Well, we love those kind of stories.
Yeah, well, that's right.
The chairman of the NEA, Dana Gioia, tells a story or has told a story. I've met him once or twice and was at a conference where he said he'd just gotten onto the Hill to start getting money for the NEA because, you know, there's that awful 80s, no more money for the NEA. And Chairman Gioia is really, he's a poet, a businessman, and an artist, and believes very strongly in the arts, and created a program called Shakespeare for a New Generation, which is a touring program. And we've been very, very lucky and pleased to have gotten that grant for the last 3 years running to take a performance to the 9th or 10th graders in the Atlanta Public School System, which is a traditionally somewhat underserved population for arts. Mm-hmm. And we were at a conference where he was speaking, and he said, I would go into these senators' representatives' offices to ask them to vote for whatever the bill was that he was supporting. Mm-hmm. And they would say things like, man, I didn't understand Shakespeare, but then there was that teacher who really made me understand. Well, that's my story. When I was in 9th grade, I just started doing children's theater. I was really shy, and my mom wanted me to get into theater. And I had already kind of thought I would like this acting thing. I'd been, you know, doing Christmas pageants and you know, play acting on holidays
right.
for a long time, and telling everybody else what to do and how to play it and all that stuff. So, and I was raised on Broadway.
We all have
musicals
a little director in us, I think.
Yeah, and 9th grade in the state of Georgia. Now and forever, thank goodness, 9th graders study Romeo and Juliet. And my teacher, Mrs. Lord, was this really, really sweet, is this really sweet lady who was teaching us Romeo and Juliet. And I didn't really get it. I had that kind of Shakespeare, and I really didn't even know what that meant. But the children's theater I was in was doing a production of Romeo and Juliet because our acting teacher kept us to a very high standard. And we did a lot of classics, a lot of stuff that was almost too much for kids, but it never seemed to be. And as we were reading Romeo and Juliet, I was thinking about rehearsal. I had, you know, I was third Capulet from the left, you know, and there was a cute boy playing Mercutio, and that was really exciting because, you know, I had a crush on him like you wouldn't believe. And I mentioned to Miss Lord that I'm kind of getting this Shakespeare thing because I'm in Romeo and Juliet right now. And I loved Mrs. Lord. You got to understand, I thought she was just the neatest teacher. Mm-hmm. She was so sweet, so smart, and so kind, and everything. When I told her I kind of got this Romeo and Juliet because we were doing the play, her eyes lit up, and she got so excited that I was understanding it on a deeper level than maybe the rest of the class was because I was participating in reading it. And she's not an actor. She had us read it out loud, but it was that, you know, terrified to be or not to be
right.
of a ninth grader. And because I admired and respected her so much and saw the passion with which her eyes lit up, I thought, there's something to this Shakespeare guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to investigate. And she really impressed upon me that acting it out was the deal. That was it.
Yeah.
That was the way. And I thought it was poetry. I didn't know that it was a play script.
Right.
And then I did Shakespeare every year. I went to Northwestern University outside of Chicago and got what is called a classical acting degree. We spent a whole year on Shakespeare and the Greeks and all the you know, the basis of a lot of stuff in the theater world. When I graduated, I just love Shakespeare. I studied it as literature, I studied as play scripts, I studied it in movement, just, you know, all over the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Still didn't really have a clue, but, you know,
right.
I just graduated from college. Came back to Atlanta because Chicago was too cold for me, because I'm from Georgia. And I immediately decided that I was going to be in a repertory company, which is, you know, a group of actors that work together all the time in one place doing a group of plays, however that was decided, preferably classical, Shakespeare and the Greeks. that's what I was going to do. And I was going to do all sorts of neat roles. And 10 years later, about 11 years ago, because I've been in Atlanta about 20-something years as a professional actor, I finally got hired here at the Tavern. And that was like 96.
Okay.
And I barely looked back. And I would get cast in a couple of shows. And we went from, at that time, we were doing between 5 to 8 shows a year, not year round. And I was in maybe 3 of them, maybe 2. It depended. And then as the years went by, I just kept sticking around and saying to Jeffrey, the artistic director, no, I'd like to be in this show. I choreographed shows. I helped, you know, whatever they wanted me to do, I tried to do it. And I continued my commercial career and I worked at other theaters. But around 1999, I was playing in a play that I wasn't really happy. I kind of felt like I'd hit some kind of ceiling as far as Shakespeare performance. Mm-hmm. Didn't know what the deal was, but it was getting harder to sustain vocal energy as well as physical. It was like I was pulled in 2 different directions, and I ended up going for a month-long extended training opportunity in Lenox, Massachusetts, which is the home of Shakespeare and Company, which is a theater company that does the classics, predominantly Shakespeare, trains and educates. And it's 25, I think they're in their 30th year now, 25th or 30th year. They've been around for a long time. The founders are still the heads of their departments. It's an intense place. And astounding creativity and teaching and learning goes on. And I became a trainee after that experience. It really just expanded my mind in a way that hadn't happened since Mrs. Lord had expanded it. And once they accepted me as a trainee, I began to start training other people here. People would ask me, so what's changed, Laura? Something's different. Can you show me what it is? And I'd start doing it. And then I created my position here as director of education and training.
Excellent.
Started the Apprentice Company, which is an 8-month-long professional program for actors just coming out into the professional field that want to be in a repertory company.
That's excellent.
Yeah, it would have been nice if we had had this 20 years ago when I was...
Somebody else had done it for you.
Yeah. Well, I was an apprentice at the Academy Theater. One of the last years they had an apprentice company, so I had kind of done it myself. And we've expanded. We're 5 years into the apprentice company. We're in the middle of our, almost to the end, actually, of our 5th season with an apprentice company. And I teach most all of their classes besides Fight and Madrigal and a couple other things. And I design the programs for our education department. We're getting to the point where we've got some students we've worked with as high school students who are going away to college to get their acting degrees. Cross your fingers, they'll come back to Atlanta and participate in our apprentice company.
Excellent.
Remain with the company because we have, you know, the leads, half the leads, all the leads in Romeo and Juliet, it seems, all the young people are ex-apprentices.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
In the play I'm directing, Love's Labor's Lost, more than half the company is ex-apprentices.
Well, let's talk about that for just a second, because this is something that we feel very strongly about. Do you guys hire exclusively Atlanta actors?
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
One of my personal... Yes,
I mean, I know I'm not an Atlanta actor, but...
No. Yeah, you know, on behalf of our brethren.
Yes, absolutely.
One of my personal beliefs is giving back to my community. That's another one of the reasons I moved back to Atlanta. I wasn't terribly happy with the weather or with the fact that I was so far away from where I grew up, which is the South. And I thought, I need to go back and make art there. Make the art that I want to make.
Right.
So I've been here ever since. And I really have always firmly believed that for the Atlanta talent pool to be employed year-round at jobs we can all raise families on, buy homes, lead the life that everyone else gets to lead.
Right.
Somebody somewhere has got to create the opportunities that keep those talented artists here.
If only more people thought that way.
I know. I was inspired early on by Shay Griffin at, she was Atlanta, I think she was with Atlanta Models and Talent. She's been a casting director in the Southeast for a long time. Mm-hmm. Don Slayton, all these other people in the commercial industry, in the movie industry, who have been doing just that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to train, trying to retain, so that so many artists don't go to another market. Now, that's okay. I mean, I can't deny someone their dreams of Broadway or L.A.
Right.
On the other hand, there were so many, there was a gaggle of talented actors, some of them from Northwestern, who came back to Georgia and then very quickly left because it just didn't seem like they were getting satisfied either by a paycheck or artistically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot more people come to Atlanta and stick around now than used to be.
That's
so
excellent.
My nefarious plan is succeeding.
Good. Excellent. Well, we thank you for taking the time to sit down with us mm-hmm. today. We don't want to take up too much of your time, but we'd love to see more of this space. Right now, all we've seen is this lovely lounge that we're sitting in.
Cool.
But we want to see more of the cool. more of the actual space.
Oh,
so.
I have to tell you about
oh, sure.
Mrs. Lord.
Oh, okay.
My favorite English teacher. She was really cool. She's retired now. I don't see her very often, but the reason I get to see her is because it turns out that her great-nephew was the same age as I was, and he went to the same high school I did, and we started dating after college, and we've been married now for about 12, 14 years.
Ah,
so Mrs.
Okay.
Lord is actually my great-aunt-in-law, and she's a lovely woman who I don't get to see enough of, but that's my special teacher story.
There oh, you go. Wow.
And thanks so, for sharing.
Yeah, that's, married yeah. into the family. I guess that's one way to make sure you stay in touch,
yeah.
stay in touch with teachers. That's great. All right, well, let's take a little tour around the theater.
Okay.
No. Yeah. Perfectly fine. So just to kind of set you off and let you know what's going on here, we're actually taking the brief tour around the Shakespeare Tavern right now. So Laura's still with us.
Yes.
All right. We're going out on the street now.
Hold the door for just a second. So you just have to notice that it's an Elizabethan playhouse. It looks kind of like the Globe. That's actually very important. This is the most recent renovation we've done. It was a $500,000 renovation to make it look like what we are. Before, we were a nondescript building front yeah. that didn't look like anything. People would stand in front of the tavern and go, "Where's the tavern?"
Yeah.
It's right here in front
well,
of you.
Well, that worked out for me because I was here in labor. I was here Labor Day last uh-huh. year and drove past here and I was like, "Oh, uh-huh. cool! I got to go back." And
yeah,
so here
there
I am.
It is. We got
yeah.
a balcony, leaded windows, leaded glass windows,
that's
and
excellent.
the fake stucco, which we just love.
Nice, and a good breeze coming off of Beechtree Street. Back inside.
And this the lobby, the upper lobby, is paneled in a Tudor or Elizabethan great room or receiving room style.
Yeah.
This is all oak. This used to be all, a door was right here where I'm standing.
Oh, okay.
You went through to the other part of the building.
Cool. And you have a copy of the first folio, thank you,
yes.
on display.
Yes, actually that's the first folio facsimile.
Right, so of course, yeah, not the real thing.
well,
that would be cool.
It's in the Elizabethan printing. We have we use Neil Freeman's first folio, which is a modern type, typeface edition
I wouldn't mind seeing
of
that,
the folio.
Actually. Yeah, I wouldn't
yeah,
mind seeing a copy
got
of that.
Some,
hi.
Somewhere.
Well, let's do this.
Upstairs.
The cool thing is I can edit out all these footsteps and stuff.
Well, leave it in.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Give it ambience. Ambiance.
And this is our lobby. This is we're below Peachtree Street now. This is the a lobby that it's been for since 1991. This is the public space. We can get 230 to 300 students seated on a Tuesday morning if they don't all come at once.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's cool.
I'll take you through the green room.
I love the Shakespeare with the Atlanta Braves hat on. That's awesome.
Yes, that's our standard logo. So we have a really tiny green room because most of the time in Shakespeare, most of the people are out on stage talking.
Right.
And our costumes are all Elizabethan. Let me grab a costume real quick.
Take pictures of this will be good stuff.
This is the current show.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, we're not intensely archaeologically psycho about our costumes.
Right.
Because Shakespeare wasn't. It was
right.
whatever he owned or his actors owned
right.
that looked nice or they inherited from their patron
that's
or
cool.
whatever.
Yeah.
And we use snaps and hooks and eyes that he may not have had, but
oh,
he would have used the most convenient things.
Yes,
also.
He would have. That's for sure.
Darn it! If people ask us about that, well, if Shakespeare used modern dress, then why aren't you dressed modern? And my reply is, if it looks like a duke and talks like a duke and quacks like a duke, it is a duke. Kings have crowns. Dukes are dressed nicely, and
right.
Juliet has a beautiful long flowy dress on.
Sure.
It just takes away that an added layer of guesswork that an audience member who may have never seen Shakespeare before doesn't have to do. They can just say, "Oh, that's a king." If he's in a business suit with a nice
right.
pink tie, is that Lear? I'm not sure.
Right.
Not that those kind of plays with, you know, a modern ambiance to them
right.
can't be astounding.
Right.
But we choose to put our energies
sure.
into some other things.
Well, that's nothing wrong with that at all.
And this is the theater. It's not lit right now.
Well, that's fine. How great. Balcony and the whole nine yards.
You can see, yeah. This is set up. This is Romeo and Juliet and Love's Labor's Lost.
Okay, so this is serving two purposes.
Yep.
Excellent, okay.
The only thing that happens is the balcony rails come down, and Romeo and Juliet gets a couple of torches, and there's...
Is the balcony functional? Is it
oh, yeah.
practical?
Oh, definitely. Cool. Yeah, in fact, that balcony can be removed. We don't do it very often. The doors are interchangeable. We have that can be a curtained entrance. That can be a door entrance. The thing that we change the most is what is in the front of
okay.
this part of the stage.
So this is actually permanent.
This is as permanent as it gets.
Okay.
It still can be moved, but it's as impermanent. But we have what we call the Roman stairs, which are stairs on all three sides.
Uh-huh.
We have a couple of long, narrow platforms that can either extend the stage or drop down.
Cool.
Stair units.
But you actually have a globe feel going on here with the balcony
yes,
surrounding three-quarter thrust kind of thing.
Square building.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a renovation in 1999. If you can see where the brick ends, there's a beam and then black wall that used to be where the roof was.
Oh,
we
okay.
blew the roof off, did about a $1.2 million renovation.
Wow.
Back in 97, 98, we raised the money. 99, we blew the roof off, put in the balcony, new air conditioning, extended the back, added this kitchen for our caterer, and did some interior improvements in the old offices and
Excellent.
Everything.
Excellent. So you guys actually do cook, you guys do all the preparation of the food. I can't talk today.
The
all
caterer,
the
chef for a night, does all the food. The tavern isn't responsible for that, but it's
okay.
a very symbiotic
separate business.
Variation.
But it's okay.
Yes.
I got it. Yeah.
And
all
then
right.
you go through the line, get your food, your drink, sit down. We have a wonderful volunteer organization. I think it's 700 people strong.
Wow.
Who donate their time? They come and take tickets, usher people, clear the tables,
oh,
and clean up afterwards.
That's incredible.
Actors and artistic staff don't do that.
That's awesome.
Yes. Oh, it's.
So it's not quite like dinner theater.
It is not dinner theater.
Yeah, I think we
are
as
not,
she slaps tea.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
I think
we
we've all got our
dinner theater
stories, don't
yeah.
we? Yeah.
Not that there can't be an amazing dinner theater.
No, that's true.
But we are not
we all have our dinner theater stories. Excellent.
And the balcony is a really great place to see a show, as is, you know, down here.
Uh-huh.
And
I love the fact that everything's done in like really dark tones and
yeah.
you know solid wood.
It's a very inviting space.
Yeah.
The only thing I think we wish now is that instead of the rough cut, this is all polished
yeah.
oak, like the Globe was and the Blackfriar Theater. There's another theater that is as much of an exact replica as you can get of the Blackfriars, which was Shakespeare's later in his career indoor theater,
mm-hmm.
which is a square. With several balconies all the way around and a stage that's deeper than this. It might be a little wider too, but it's deeper than this. It goes out into the audience. And the permanent structure is all this gorgeous honey polished oak.
Oh, yeah.
Shakespeare had probably oak that's not so rough as this and had a lot of faux marble surfaces like the Globe does now.
Yeah.
If you look at pictures of the Globe, there's a lot of brightly painted permanent scenery.
Excellent.
That's just the walls.
Yeah. So this is working. I'm liking this. I mean, it's...
This is a great place to,
yeah.
to perform Shakespeare.
Oh,
it's very warm and inviting. Very. The acoustics are great. The singing, we, you know, do all our singing, dancing, obviously, mm-hmm. but the singing itself and the music is all period style instruments.
Excellent.
in the manner of Shakespeare.
Do you guys ever cast from SETC or do you just cast Atlanta?
No, we don't go to SETCs to cast.
Okay.
Yeah, we go through for actors coming out into the world in Atlanta, there's something called the Unified Auditions and they're actually in a couple of weeks, the end of March, so it's too late
okay.
to apply for this year, but it's an annual
Atlanta
based. Giant
okay.
call run by the Atlanta Coalition of Performing Arts, and
that's
you can find out more about it at atlantaperforms.com.
Cool, we'll link to that as well.
Which is also a terrific gateway to the performing arts throughout Atlanta and the Northeast Georgia region.
Excellent, okay.
And we go to those, and then we have our own generals that we advertise on atlantaperforms.com.
Cool, excellent. Good deal.
That's
all right.
Where we cast our plans.
Well, thanks again.
You're welcome.